Well, thank you everyone for coming along this evening. Thank you that you've taken the time out to once again spend a bit of time with God's Word. Tonight's speaker is the Venerable James Barjabos. Now, I believe this is part two of a series, and shortly, possibly even, to become part three. Coming next week, I believe, possibly. His topic this evening, of course, is demons, fallen angels, and other phantasmia. Now, James has wanted to revisit the reading we had last time. We'll be looking at Mark chapter 1, and starting at verse 21 to verse 28. Dear James, you may take the helm.
Well, bless you, Trev, and thrice bless you, Janet. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming tonight. This is, I guess, a bit of a personal journey for me, and like, it might not excite everyone, but hopefully tonight we'll learn a trick or two about spirits, fallen angels, and other phantasma. So we want to continue to look at the language of the demonic. It gets a bit repetitive, right? So we've got evil spirits, we've got unclean spirits, we've got demons, we've got devils, so we'll call it demonic language. We want to have a look at some patterns that emerge with the miracles that Jesus performs, the healing miracles, and we want to reach a conclusion about why some terminology was used then, and whether what we've thought about that terminology is correct. And we want to have a look at this idea of Jesus and others using accommodating language, just like we do today. So also the spirits of evil do exist today. We'll look at that, and we'll also look at another important element of this, that the language that Jesus uses and the writers adopt is symbolic. Now, this is a layered cake. My conclusions that I'm formulating are being arrived at from several different angles. So I will call them considerations or alternatives, and I'm really happy for your feedback. But you might remember our original query was, why does Jesus talk to demons, and more peculiarly, why do they talk back? We know they do, because in the episode with Legion, in Mark chapter 5 and verse 12, there is a large herd of pigs. They were just grazing there on the hillside. Free-range pigs, Coles and Woolies will be happy. Years ahead of their time, the Grecian pig farmers. And it says the evil spirits implored him, send us over into those pigs. And Jesus says, okay, well, that's what I'll do. Now, there was a lot of pigs. We're told how many there are. Now, as I sort of wondered last time, the demonic language does not help us in the story at all. It's like adding, and he wore red socks or he had red hair. It doesn't help us. In fact, it confuses us, because it takes away the power of the story, which is how her blindness is healed, her deafness is healed. She can now speak. Maybe he speaks a little less. He had epilepsy and now it doesn't exist anymore. So the power of what Jesus is talking about is how it changed the lives of these people and the lives of their carers, and in particular their parents, forever. Their lives were never the same when Jesus' comforting, healing hands touched them. But I think we miss some of the story and some of the beauty of the story because we feel obligated to talk about these demons. But first, the underworld. Oh, I actually thought my notes said, but first, the underwear, which would have been really weird. In the 1970s, it became quite a fashion to gather your hippie-like friends around and a medium would have you sit around a table. On top of the table, there would be a board, and that board was called a Ouija board. And this medium would enchant, and, you know, there'd be a few questions beforehand, and they'd be able to generalise enough that it was apparent that there was an apparition, right? And everyone drank Bacardi and they all went home happy, right? So going to mediums isn't a new thing. In fact, it might even remind us of a familiar story. Now, by popular request of the chair, we're going to jump aboard our magic carpet. Where's me buzzer? Oh, ta-da! And we're going to head off to Endor. To Endor. Ah, hang on. It's way.
Here's one we prepared earlier.
Behold! All right, forget about Endor trip. All right, let's hit that, see what happens. Yes! All right. Well, the familiar spirit. Okay, now it is a bit of a strange story, right? So let's just cover off some of the background quickly. King Saul disguises himself to walk through the numerous Philistines that had him surrounded. He heads tens of miles north to find a witch. Now, when he was trying to identify if this person still existed, really specifically, he said, "I need to find a woman who is a witch." Now, can I just ask, why didn't he want to see a man? Were man wizards not as good as female witches? Any ideas? Well, it's pretty obvious to me, Catherine, that he'd done what he should have done and he'd taken care of all of the male enchanters, all the necromancers, all the wizards. He was told to get rid of them and he did. But this woman had somehow escaped the net. Now, he knocks on the door to this sort of one-person psychic convention and she's worried. She says, I've heard Saul's going to kill all of the people like me. So, no, I've got to... And he says, it's okay. Hand on heart, I swear on the Lord you won't be killed. Says a lot about Saul's state, this whole story. Anyway, the one underground operation which was still in existence, Saul finds. What can I do for you? And we know the rest of the story from there, that he wants Samuel to give him advice. Now, somewhat annoyed at the disturbance, a grumpy Samuel then carries on a conversation, well, it's probably more of a lecture, and that contains a prophecy. And the prophecy was, tomorrow, specific, not the day after, not in a week, but tomorrow, you're going to die. And so will your sons, all of them. And it came true. So here's the challenge for us to think about. Okay, so demons, fallen angels, and phantasma. This is part of the underworld story in the Bible. What has actually happened here? I would think it'd be really easy to mimic Samuel's voice. He spoke in a particular way. His name means cry out of God. When he prayed, he shrieked. Okay, I get that. He would have dressed in a certain way. Roger Lewis said it once at Glenlock, so it's true. And the Hebrew word, when he prays, he cries to God. It's the word, Hebrew word shriek. Am I going to have any more interruptions from you? Because you might be asked to leave. That's 2 in 10 minutes. Okay? All right. Jack, can you just monitor this, please? I'm relying on you. M, security. So... we'll tread too far away and throw something at you, Kat. But okay, let's get back on topic. So I can fake the voice. I can guess what Samuel wore. He's one of these judgy types, so he had his special coat and his mantle. I might have been able to listen to the whispers of travellers and give a compelling story that God had left him mean, she's a witch. Samuel's there, so Saul's coming to see her, so maybe she's deduced that. But also the travellers have said, oh, there's this young punk called David, he's taking over the kingdom. So, yeah, she could have mentioned that. But I find it very hard for her to put the pieces together and then predict the day of his death and all of his sons. Now, so we'll say, well, there's no way that God would allow the spirits of the underworld to do that talking. Now, I'm only guessing, so your guess is as good as my guess. But there is another time. Oh, what are we looking at here, people? You people? You all did it in Sunday school with someone who was a brilliant teacher, one of the favourites, you said. Lied on the feedback surveys. Yeah. Okay, so we've got Jesus, Elijah and Moses. So this is the transfiguration. So, and you've got the three disciples down below. Oh no, Jesus, well, let's build some tents. Remember that story? So God can raise Moses, God can raise Elijah. At the death of Jesus, there are dozens of graves that can be opened. He can also raise Samuel. Now, it isn't just a coincidence that of Saul it is said multiple times that the Lord allowed an evil spirit. In fact, if he didn't have that evil spirit, he would never have come in contact with David, because David arrived to soothe him, and he did. When David played, it calmed him. The evil spirit came back. David came back and played, and so this cycle went on. Evil spirit. So in our hymn that we sung tonight, we will all accept that God knows our thoughts, God knows our words, and God knows our actions. And again, that is an important part of this story. So let's have a quick recap. There is a pandemic of demons in the New Testament. In the Old Testament, they're not even named once. The idea was not commonly known, and it certainly wasn't written about. Demonic language in the healing miracles is random. We can have someone who was blind in Mark 8, and we can have someone in Mark 1 who has a demon, or we can have someone who is blind and a demon in Matthew chapter 12. So whether we have a demon or whether we don't have a demon, it appears to be very random. We also learned that evil spirits do not equal a mental illness. The terms unclean spirit, evil spirit, demons and devils are all synonymous for one thing: an ailment of some description, an ailment that needed healing. I've also argued that using this language really doesn't help our understanding of the story, but it's there for a reason. So therefore we have to explore, well, why is it there? Or why is it there in some cases and why is it not there in others? Just one observation I would make about the demonic healings. So when we've considered Legion, we've read Mark 1, have thought about Mark chapter 9, which is the boy that rolls into the fire. So some of these conditions I would almost classify as neurological. So by neurological, let me just ask you for a few examples. If what kind of condition, neurological condition, might lead to me being mute? So a person who was blind, deaf and mute was healed by Jesus, had a demon, okay? Are there any neurological conditions that might cause people to be unable to speak? Sing them out.
Just not speak. Trauma can do that.
Yep, it can. It can, but it's not a new neurological condition. What did you say, Pop? That can too.
A stroke.
So I think that would be sort of top of the list. Now, by the way, a stroke can also cause blindness. Blindness can also be caused by Alzheimer's disease. There are other conditions such as aphasia, which is a neurological condition where people can't speak. Not being able to hear, there's a number of neurological conditions that can cause deafness. Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, autism. So there's quite a wide range. Now, that plays out to the story of this conversation being symbolic, because it's a battle of people's minds that Jesus wants to win. So we have to look at Mark chapter 1. If it's on your lap, I'll just summarise the story. So in Mark chapter 1, we have an amazing identification of Jesus, known to the person because he knew his name and where he was from, but is described in a rather unique way. Okay. But what was Jesus doing? Where was he? To teach, didn't he? Yeah, so Jesus is in there teaching, regular thing that Jesus did, especially in Capernaum. At the end of the story, what do the people say about his healing? Verse 28, I think there. Huey, you got that? 27, right? Sorry. Yep, sorry, mate. Might be 27.
What was the question?
Just read verse 27 for us.
And they were all amazed, insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, "What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commanded he even the unclean spirits that they do obey."
So Jesus is in there teaching. It references teaching again. At the end of the verse, the people are so amazed. But they're not amazed really at the healing. They're amazed at the power of what Jesus was saying. The healing was a condiment to Jesus' words. Did it reinforce his message? It did to the person who had the condition. But what did everyone else see? Everyone else was amazed by what Jesus was saying. Okay, so terminology. So I don't know whether necessarily the disciples believed in ghosts, but they reference it twice. Once out in a boat where they see Jesus walking on the water in Matthew chapter 14, and 3 years later on the shores of Galilee. So just a reminder, we discovered last time that Kayla would quickly succumb to a zombie attack. She self-reported that she would not stand a chance if the zombies arrived. We also had another interesting observation from Karis, who said that the way she would avoid a zombie incursion was by going out into the ocean. Rather bizarrely, the Bible talks about that. So my question previously was, does Jesus actually mention a demon? Does he use the word? Well, there's a parable where he does. It's really quite odd. But what stems from that parable is the idea that a spirit would stay on dry land, because if it went across on the water, that's where all the other spirits were, and it would just be absorbed by the other spirits. So sorry, Karis, not even going onto water will save you from the zombie incursion. Now, if Kayla was on the boat with the disciples, she would have been as equally spooked. Jesus says to them, we have to listen carefully to what Jesus says. You haven't seen a ghost. Touch me, come and hold me, and find out for yourselves. Now, you should know that a ghost, a phantom, doesn't have flesh and spirit, doesn't have flesh and bones like me. Touch me. So here's the problem. Ghosts don't exist. Jesus doesn't correct the error. Why doesn't Jesus simply say, "Boys, there's no ghost here." He is just accommodating their idea. He's accommodating their idea that there was a ghost, it existed, and ghosts typically look like that. Now, this is important because there are many other places in the Bible where both Jesus and others use the language of accommodation. So we'll talk about that as we go through tonight. Now, let's have a look first at what we're going to deal with. Alternative 2, 3, we'll look at these considerations. Angel, we'll look at fallen angels and talking to evil spirits, the history of evil spirits and what happens when we die. Alternative number one on the story of demons is that there is such a thing as demons. Okay, the baseline is we discount that. Alternative 2, in trying to understand why the language is used, is this. The gospel writers and Jesus were children of their time. Because they were children of their time, and everyone believed that if you had an illness, it was caused by a demon, a bad demon, and it possessed you, then they just went along with that idea. So none of us would believe that, right? But that's an alternative suggestion. The challenge with it is that we now know more than Jesus because we understand, for example, what the cause of some mental illness conditions might be,
yeah,
right?
Jesus knew that, though.
Jesus did know that. We sung about it. So that alternative is wrong. It's false. It's ridiculous to say just because we live in this time, we know more than Jesus, right? So I just want to deal with it because it's an alternative. Now, the explanation that most of us have grown up with is known as the accommodation theory. It is a bit different to what I described the ghost story as being, right? The accommodation theory is, whilst Jesus didn't believe in supernatural demons, he accommodated the language because that's what everyone else believed. The disciples spoke about ghosts. Jesus didn't believe in ghosts, but he accommodated the language. Touch me, I'm not a ghost. So we need to explore that. The accommodation theory, look, it's not surprising that most of us believe in that idea because it's a Calvinist idea and, you know, that's sort of some of our roots. Okay. It does appear that when Jesus confronts a demon, he sort of happily falls in line with the fact. In fact, he positively encourages the thought in the case of Legion that we'll look at in a moment, that demons not only exist, but we should believe in them because Jesus was talking to them. And not once does he ever correct the record. He never takes the time in all of these examples, of which there are about a dozen, to correct this idea. So why doesn't he correct it if it's wrong? And that always sort of got on my skin. So I want to just have a quick look at the story of Legion to see how convincing it would be if you believed in demons. Verse 2, verse 12, verse 13, verse 15 and verse 18 all describe in the narrative the demon, the conversation with the demon. So we're steered in this direction of believing in them. Believing in the reality of them. But more importantly, we have the words of Jesus in verse 8, which says, "Come out, unclean spirit." So that's a pile of evidence. In one story, there's 6 or 7 elements of the conversation. Okay, let's talk about... I'm going to be really quick or just a bit slower. I'll go a bit slower. So... this is sort of a typical view. Jesus, while not believing in or teaching the existence of demons, fell in line with the thinking of his contemporaries, adopting demonic modes of speech or demonic modes of speech, but without supporting or encouraging such ways of thinking. But why does he? So there are probably 3 things, three topics that we'll cover off, maybe not as holistically as I'd like, but we can perhaps leave one of them for next time or two of them. I want to talk about terminology first. There's no doubt that the cause of sickness to people living in ancient times was problematic. So the Greek philosopher Hippocrates, from Bill and Ted's Wonderful Adventure fame, right? Okay. Well, 400 BC, he started writing about a theory, a medical theory. Now, it had legs because it lasted for 2,000 years. And the theory is known as the miasma theory. Miasma theory. Sean is getting to know a little bit about miasma theory. So what it basically interpreted, or the way that it interpreted disease, was disease was caused by emanations, poisonous emanations. Now, I think emanations is just a sneaky word for gas. But basically, the emanation was only identifiable by foul-smelling air. Now, you and I would laugh at that and you'd say, well, that's ridiculous. But that was the terminal. That's right. Until COVID hit and we bought a cat. They are two of the benchmark. Yeah. So, but for 2,000 years, get rid of the cat. I'm married to a mate. Cat. Yeah, I know. Fair enough. Now, this idea changed, as humans are smart. So in the 19th century, after a battle of 100 years, the scientists said, no, it's no more the bad smell. It's now the germ. So thankfully. In fact, the only reason why it was accepted was that they could not explain cholera in the UK from bad air. So anyway, we got germ theory. But illnesses are called strange things. And the name sticks. Firstly, let's think about the background of the word malaria. I'm the only person that would have helped me with this is Sam, because malaria is a Latin word, mala, which means bad, nice. Aria, which means out in the open. Right? Malaria. Well, it means bad air. Well, there's a strange coincidence. Well, why does it mean bad air? It originates in sort of the marshy, swampy areas of Africa, it is believed, travels down through the Nile Delta, and by 150 BC, it starts to make its way across the Mediterranean and then around the world. It was also in India and possibly in China. So it was believed that these bogs and sort of stinking swamps was the cause of malaria. Now, we know it's not the cause. We're clever. We have realised that it's actually just a parasite that is transferred by a particular mosquito or two. Now, if you go to a country and you say to them, I think I have malaria, the doctor isn't looking at you as if you're a goose saying, oh, well, he thinks he's got a bout of bad air. It's just the name of the disease, right? Now, none of us here would think we get malaria from being near our cat. I hope. Well, influenza is fairly similar. It comes from a Latin idea, influenza. I can't say it properly. That was a bit Spanish. I need to, uno, dos, influenza. That's better. It means a mysterious eminence from the stars, an influence from the stars. So people got crook. They were moonstruck. They thought that I was wandering outside at night. Might have been a bit cold. Bumped into someone, got influenza. But we don't say, oh, no, I've been walking out at night. I've been moonstruck. We call it influenza. Dengue fever's even worse. The etymology of dengue fever, it's basically because because you sort of, your body sort of contorted a bit and you went a bit stiff, right? So the West Indian word for an English dandy is dengue. And so that's why they called it dengue fever, because you all went sort of stiff and you looked like a bit upper class. So weird. But we still use all of the terms today. But we don't believe they're the cause. Anyone know who Rohit Sharma is? He is a cricketer. He is the young punks here will definitely know Mark Pellegrino, I'm sure. All right. The vernacular of demons is still in our language today. Rohit Sharma, coming back from his injury, says, I'll do this in English, not Indian. Comebacks are not at all easy after a major surgery. The difficult part is to conquer the inner demons. It's all in the mind, and only an individual can overcome his fears. So we continue to use this idea of demons, don't we? You know, James is full of his inner demons. Plural. Do you guys know who Mark Pellegrino is? Come on, I'm more hip than you. He said, everyone has monsters and demons within themselves. They're metaphors for the human condition. Now, Mark would know all about this topic because in the supernatural, he plays Lucifer. And you can see in this next image just how tough it is to be the king of the fallen angels. He doesn't seem too perturbed by the chains, etc., but doesn't look too terrified. He said, this idea of demons is a metaphor for the human condition. And we'd agree with that. It's terminology. It's a figure of speech. Everyone has monsters and demons within themselves, is what he said. And that is what the gospel writers wrote about. So we interpret that in Jesus' time, to have a demon was to believe in being possessed. There is not very much evidence for that. So to understand the history of demons and where their mythology stems from, we have to go back to some ancient civilizations. So Steve Hill gave me a really interesting book which is about the history of the mythology. It starts off that demons, who are called demigods, were doing all sorts of amazing things. So they weren't immortal, they weren't part of the gods' sort of structure. They weren't mortal, but they could come down and intervene, and they only did good things. They helped, they were positive. You know, they turned people's lives around. Over time, though, that completely changed and demons became the purveyors of only bad things. So it is fair to say that there's terminology in Jesus' time where people would say, I have a demon, which was blindness or a cut on their leg or some other condition. They would use that language, but it just meant that I was sick. I have a demon. I have malaria. I've got a condition, but I haven't got bad air, right? So that's the point I'm trying to emphasise. And I've just emphasised it. Okay, so I might just finish on a couple of charts. Busy, busy chart. This is really bad presentation. Presentation 101. So you don't need to know anything that's in it. All I want you to notice are the colours. Okay, traffic lights. What do they stand for? So these are all of the healing miracles of Jesus. The ones in green are where there is a condition and it's attached to a demon. Let's say a fifth of them. The ones in red is a condition, but there is no demon. And they all occur in the northern half of Israel. Okay? So we've got demons versus demons, and we're all above Samaria. What about the orange ones? It's ambiguous as to whether there was a demon involved or not, but the language of the cure replicates what Jesus has said about those who had a demon removed. So because it's ambiguous, that's why I've included it. But there's no doubt that Jesus uses the language, all right? What about the white ones? Now, this is not easy to explain. The white ones are Jesus' healing miracles that all occur under Samaria. So what, you say? Not one of them that occurs under Samaria involves a demon. Now, I find that fascinating and demanding an answer. Others might go, well, big deal. But is there a correlation between the miracle and the language? Is there a correlation between the language and the location? Is there a correlation between the miracle and the location? So, I don't know. Let's see if we can illustrate this in a different way. So we've got, I don't know, 28 or 29 odd demon miracles or healing miracles. There's a few extra ones where, like there's one in Acts. Remember Sot played the mad woman from Acts 16? Well, it says that a demon was exorcised from her. She had the spirit of divination. She was a medium. So look, have a look at how stacked they are around the Sea of Galilee. Now, if I go through and name those miracles, healing miracles only, that occur there, like you would know them. But then when we come down, not only do the healings reduce in number, but there's still a third of them. There is none of them that reference demonic language. So it is a false conclusion to say that all miracles of healing in the north use demonic language. Even all of the miracles that occurred in Capernaum, which is where most of the demon miracles were, as a percentage. But the backdrop of this story, of this illustration, is who was living where? And that might be a story for another night, Trev.